Hi, welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And Green Diva Lynn.
Yeah. Whoop, whoop. Yeah.
Yeehaw.
We like to, you know, have our own little parties here. So Lynn
yes,
is actually
is.
In the city of Chicago this week.
Yes, I am. I'm in the Ukrainian village, leaving tonight. And a big thank you to Beth England and her husband, Tom.
Yeah. It's been our GD studio in Chicago this week.
Yes,
kind of fun.
I washed all the sheets and made everything nice and clean. So I'm hoping to get like 5 stars as a guest so that I'm invited back again to house sit while they're traveling.
She's sucking up, and I don't blame you. Yeah, the place looked really great from the pictures.
Yeah, it's very fun.
So how would you describe our show this week, Lynn?
Groovy.
We have to come up with
well-rounded show.
Better adjectives, because I'm always like, it's an excellent show. And
or
I'm like,
cool. Or
really,
great.
Yeah, please shoot me now. Okay, so, and I didn't mean that if there's any psychos listening.
Pusillanimous.
We have, what?
Pusillanimous.
I've never heard, is that?
I'm not sure if I'm even pronouncing that right. Don't ask me what it means. It's the word of today.
Okay, but you
everybody look it up.
That's just mean. Okay, so
no, but it's not pusillanimous because that means it's drinkable. Well, it's agreeably stimulating, interesting, or attractive. So
drinkable. All right, we've got a drinkable show. Hopefully, it doesn't make you want to drink.
It can also mean cowardly, unfortunately, but we're not using it in that.
Well, that's weird.
That
that's just weird.
We oh no! I bet this is like one of those quizzes. I have to pick which one it is.
Yeah, because those are like wildly different, you know, descriptions. Drinkable or cowardly or really, really brave.
Cowardly.
Bummer.
Okay, forget that. Scratch it.
We're brave. So, listen, talk about brave, like weather. Hello. Our feature today is with a fabulous guy. I mean, if you have ever watched weather and watched those cool graphics, you have probably seen the work of Paul Douglas. He's not only a weatherman.
It's like, what hasn't this guy done?
I know. He's not only a weatherman that's very well known.
Meteorologist.
He probably prefers that. But he's a really neat guy. And we just had such a great conversation. So you're going to want to listen to this guy. And I really like that, you know, politically he comes from a slightly more conservative standpoint than perhaps I do. But he's open and he's, you know, someone you can discuss things with. And he definitely believes in climate change and is trying to help convince and you know, create awareness among some of the more conservative folks. So we
more
love that. We just love that. And then we talked to your guy, your friend, Jack Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You devoted your My Earth 360 to him. Tell us why. Quickly.
I did. Well, there's a whole big grassroots effort in Illinois to require GMO labeling, and he's part of Food and Water Watch, so I've been doing a little bit of volunteer work with them, and so you had him on the show to talk more about that and what people can do, hopefully nationally, too.
There's yes. Well, because
ways to put pressure on our elected officials.
Yeah, so we're going to be following you and Jack through this process, so everybody's going to want to tune into that. We have one of our great two-minute garden segments on seeds because it is that time. If you're thinking about starting your own seeds, it's time to start thinking about it, right? Okay, so we talked to our favorite mommy greenist, and I always want to say in my head. My head always says mommy dearest.
Oh,
Rachel.
She was kind of playing on that.
Yeah, well, it works because it totally sticks. Rachel Sarnoff. We did an eco-style segment with her about a campaign that she ran over the holidays that is something that we can really all aspire to all the time, right?
Right, right.
Stop, drop, challenge. Let's see. And then, we have a new eco-sexy segment.
Ooh la la.
Ooh la la.
Your purr.
Oh, purr. Like that?
Yeah.
I don't know. That one's just sort of like a manic cat. A little manic cat. But we have a fascinating woman named Jennifer Reed, who's really,
yeah.
I mean, this is, I think her thesis for a PhD is environmental sexuality. I think it's eco-sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a discussion about nature is erotic.
Otherwise known as? Neurotic. I just made that up.
See, Lynn is so, she's playing with words today, people. Has
it's
fun
a
with
word
words.
Theme.
So, I'm just going to segue really roughly here to the fact that fundgdgd.com.
Yeah, it was very rough.
Really rough.
It was
still
a rough segue if I ever saw one.
It was a rough segue. I'm non sequitur Meg, you know, whatever.
Hey, that's my name.
That's right. Anyway, that's we are still at it. We took a little break from, you know, from pushing, but we really feel strongly about GDGD Radio and providing this platform. It's really not about just donating money to us. First of all, you're contributing to something, a new community, a new platform with fantastic, the best information we can get our hands on that we'll share with you. But and you get cool green swag. And we're doing it for Mother
yeah,
there's Earth.
Awesome perks.
Yeah, and it's for Mama Earth, really. We just want to keep the lights on and keep this thing going. So we really, really urge you to please go to fundgdgd.com. Even if you can only do $10, do it. It really will make a difference. And better than that, share it.
Yes, please share it up.
Share it up and urge your friends. And
and we appreciate it. We appreciate everyone who has contributed so far or...
Yes.
I can't talk now.
I know. And by the way, I think one of our rewards is buygreen.com gift certificate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my segue. Okay, I'm getting better at it. To our fabulous sponsor, buygreen.com.
Right on.
The best, most trusted source for green products for home, office, baby, yard, whatever.
See what I mean? It's a very well-rounded podcast today.
It's groovy. So stay tuned, people. Great stuff coming. Overwhelmed by environmental news? Listen to the Green Diva's My Earth 360 report for the latest eco news bits from around the globe. Carefully curated and born by our need to say WTF. But we also love to share encouraging stories and, of course, ways that you can make your voice count for the earth. It's not just my earth, it's our earth, and together we can make a difference. Another special My Earth 360 report. Lynn has given her time generously and with good cause to Jack Miller, who's an organizer with Food and Water Watch. He's in Chicago heading up a new grassroots campaign to help get GMO labeling in Chicago. Hi, Jack.
Hi. It's good to be with you.
So tell me what's going on out there.
Food and Water Watch has just launched a campaign. It's called Let Me Decide campaign around labeling genetically engineered foods. I'm stationed mostly in northern Chicago.
Excellent. And, yeah, Let Me Decide, for sure. I love it. Okay, so... tell me about what's going on in Chicago in particular, because Chicago, you know, I mean, isn't there a lot of agriculture in Illinois?
There is. So here in Illinois, like most states, there's no difference in labeling between normal foods and genetically engineered ones. Foods are sold in grocery stores, and consumers really can't tell the difference. And we at Food and Water Watch think that that's, you know, should really change. There are no long-term studies proving that genetically engineered foods are safe for humans to eat. And until that happens, we think that consumers deserve the right to know what's in the food and can make their own informed decisions.
Yeah. Now, of course, we all watched California have their proposition, I can't remember what the number was, but it was voted down because they were such a large-scale campaign for the companies that obviously produce and promote GMOs. That did not want labeling. So
yes.
How are you guys going to go about making change in Illinois? And have you learned from that, you know, that incident?
Well, yeah, this is not a ballot initiative. The ballot initiatives that you saw on the West Coast were largely defeated by, you know, companies in the food industry who spent, you know, tens of millions, sometimes $22 million you know, they spent that in Washington State and almost double that in California. This, we're going through the legislative process, which has been successful in Vermont, in Maine, in Connecticut, because, you know, study after study that we see has upper 90s, you know, 93% of Americans support labeling. That was according to a poll by ABC this past summer. So we're going the legislative route and trying to ask our legislators to support consumers and their constituents. And everyone really wants to know, you know, about these foods and have them labeled and have a choice.
So do you have, I mean, you may be early on in the campaign. Do you have a sponsor in your state legislature yet?
Yes, the sponsor of the bill was just introduced in early February by Senator Kaler from Peoria. The Senate bill number is 734, which is the Genetically Engineered Food Labeling Act. We've got several co-sponsors and are looking to organize legislators to, you know, when we talk to folks, this is really an overwhelming issue. People just really care about what they eat, obviously, what they feed their families.
Yeah.
So right now we're looking to build up that grassroots support.
And so are you optimistic?
I'm very optimistic. You got to be. You know, pretty much everyone we talk to, whether it's a small business owner, people we talk on the streets, people are signing our petitions and coalition letters, you know, left and right. It's been a very busy week, you know, past month since we started this.
Okay.
We just had a very exciting call-in day where we, you know, my district alone, we generated just about 200 calls into Senator Dan Duffy's office asking him to support the legislation. So people are really fired up about this. It's great to see.
Well, I'm really glad to see, and I know Green Diva Lynn is involved, and of course, and we're going to learn and talk to you as things evolve, because those of us in other states may be able to learn, you know, how to be successful at this.
Oh yeah, it's you know, a model that we're sort of pioneering here, just because, you know, there's so much opposition from food manufacturers and, you know, stores, but, you know, the people really want this, and that's something we're trying to tell legislators, that, you know, overwhelmingly over 90% of people want this, and it's time to, you know, label GMOs.
Yeah, suck it up, people. I mean, New Jersey, come on, we're the Garden State. We used to produce a lot of food, but we have a lot of the chemical manufacturers here and probably some of the, you know, GMO-type manufacturers. So I'm going to be curious how you all do, and I'm really excited that you're doing this. You're out there passionate about making a change and optimistic. I think that's what's necessary. So you will keep us informed?
Absolutely, yeah. Diva Lynn is sort of part of our campaign. She came to our kickoff meeting and is very enthusiastic, so I'm sure you'll be hearing more from us, but you know, we're very excited to be kicking this off. It's exciting.
All right. Well, good luck with everything, and we will talk to you soon, Jack. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Meg.
Get all the details from this Green Divas My Earth 360 report and lots more on thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com, and myearth360.com. Wishing you had a green thumb or want to learn more about sustainable gardening outdoors and in? Expert Green Divas and Dude Gardeners share tips for everything from composting to growing herbs in your kitchen. Listen to the Green Divas Green Thumb for low-stress gardening tips.
This is Gardening in 2 Minutes. As we begin to look at purchasing seeds for this growing season, you'll see three different categories of seeds: heirloom, organic, and hybrid. And there's a fourth category that you will not be able to purchase, but you will need to know about.
And that is genetically modified seeds, or GMO seeds.
You will not be able to purchase these because these are under contract with big ag, or the big farmers that purchase from the biotech companies, sign contracts and agreements on what they can and cannot do with those seeds. And they can be sued if they fall with outside the contractual obligations from the biotech companies. Well, as gardeners, we don't have to worry about that because we can't purchase those seeds.
But not
as of right now. So we want to look at heirloom seeds. Heirloom seeds are seeds that have been passed down for generations upon generations. The pink brandywine, or the brandywine varieties of But tomatoes are a well-known heirloom. American flag leeks is another great heirloom. So these have been passed down for somewhere 50 plus to several hundred years. Organic seeds are seeds that are you are able to grow that have been grown in certified organic practices. These seeds that you purchase have been certified organic by the USDA. Now, what this means that there was no chemicals used that falls outside that parameter. Even people who use Miracle-Gro are not able to sell their seeds as certified or organic. And then you have hybrids. Hybrids, there's nothing wrong with hybrids. There's nothing wrong with organic. There's nothing wrong with heirlooms. This is all a personal preference. Hybrids are where you growers have taken plant A and plant B and cross-pollinated them, much like nature does, to get a better plant in the end result. You take plant A, that is drought-tolerant, plant B, which is productive, overproductive, put them together, you've got a drought-tolerant, very productive plant. So based on what you're looking for, these are the seed type of varieties that you will see, and whichever fits best in your garden, that's what you need to grow. For more information on seeds and specific seed types, our weekly video productions, as well as our free downloadable digital quarterly magazine, you can find all that information at
thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.
For the health-conscious organic gardener worldwide. For Gardening in 2 Minutes, I'm Joy Baird.
And I'm Holly Baird.
Inspired to grow more organic stuff? We are. To learn more about this Green Diva's Green Thumb episode and all kinds of other great green information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
The headlines are filled with news about GMOs, or genetically modified organisms. But exactly what are these products that are genetically engineered? The answer right after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
Commercial sale of genetically modified foods began in 1994 with a delayed ripening tomato. Typically, genetically modified foods are products like soybeans, corn, canola, and cottonseed oil. These may have been engineered for faster growth, resistance to pathogens, production of extra nutrients, or any other beneficial purpose. There are a few studies linking GMOs to potential dangers for humans and the environment, which has created a growing movement to demand transparency from the growers and manufacturers of our food sources, and the consumer's right to know what they are paying for. It's been said that you are what you eat. With that in mind, I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
No one ever said you had to give up style to be a green diva. Or dude, check out this Green Diva's EcoStyle segment for all the latest trends in sustainable, ethical, gorgeous EcoStyle. Very happy to finally have back after it's been a long time since we've chatted, Rachel, but we've got Rachel Sarnoff, who's the founder of MommyGreenest.com, and I always want to say Mommy Dearest, very clever. And that's Rachel Lincoln Sarnoff, I apologize.
She's
the former executive director of Healthy Child, so she's been busy. Now,
nice to talk with you again.
Yeah. Now, one of the things you've been busy with is you did another shop drop challenge, and I want you to explain to us what that is and how it went this year.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we're talking about it now because, you know, I do this. This is the second year, and I plan to do it every year in January. And so, you know, obviously it's not January anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is a challenge that you can take on your own any time of the year.
Yeah.
And it's great way, you know, not only to kind of plug into some environmental, you know, good, but also to save yourself a lot of money and time. That was key. You know, last year I started the challenge. I started looking at the numbers in terms of what women spend and then what we put in the landfill every month. And basically, we on average spend about $60 a month on clothes. This is a national average, so it's going to be higher or lower in places.
Right.
$60 a month on clothes, and then we throw away 6 pounds of textile waste every month. So if you look at the amount of women in this country, so there's 160 million women in this country, and if you do those numbers, you quickly get to about just under $10 billion that we spend every month on clothes.
Wow.
And $1 billion of textile waste. So,
textiles are like one of the worst environmental offenders, you know, the production of textiles, right?
Right, right. So, you know, last year when I started the challenge, basically it was A, to help people kind of, you know, check in just for 30 days on their spending and their consumption and try to kind of, you know, be aware of that. But also it was trying to encourage women to thrift or swap do online consignments. Like there's great, this year we brought in ThredUp.com as a partner. And they supported the Shop Drop Challenge with a, you know, pre-loved handbag giveaway. So there's so many ways to get your fashion fixed, as we talk about it at MommyGreen.com. Get your fashion fixed.
Yeah.
But, still have it be environmentally conscious. And so it's kind of an awareness builder. And yeah, you know, when I started looking at the numbers for this year, you know, I looked also into fast fashion and just found, you know, some really astounding statistics. 95% of textiles that we throw away are recyclable. Fashion is the second largest polluter of water after agriculture, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
And 1.7 billion pieces of clothing go unused in closets. Basically, they're just sitting there. So that's where kind of the swapping and thrifting concept comes back in, because you've got this stuff sitting in your closet. You might as well make it work for you, right?
I love that. And I do that. My children and I are, you know, my daughters are a little bit older now. So that's one of our favorite things to do, is go to consignment and... they're mostly the same size, so they do swap clothes all the time just amongst themselves.
Yeah.
But it's fun when you do have a group of friends and I know friends that have organized swaps.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, have you ever gone to one of those?
I have not, and I have always wanted to, so maybe I have to get busy and organize one.
Yeah, they're really fun. They're really, really fun. One of the reasons... I'm a partner on a swap store here in Santa Monica, and one of the reasons I got into that was through swapping, private swapping. And so, you know, when you organize those swaps, it's so fun because you have a bottle of wine and you guys have
it's like a party.
Food and, you know, you're like, oh, those jeans look great on you. You know, here, take them. And then the person's like, oh, take this purse. And, you know, it becomes really fun. But, there's also a little bit of an obligation when you're swapping with your friends, which is where a company like ThredUp comes in, where you can kind of take that process online and, you know, make it really easy. And,
yeah.
And so I was so honored to have them be a part of the Shop Drop Challenge this year. That was like when they said they wanted to participate, I was like, oh, this is so amazing.
Yeah, that's very cool. ThredUp is a neat organization. I think we... Alicia Reiner is one of their, she does some work with them. The actress from...
Yeah, yeah, she's a friend of mine. Yeah, yeah, she's a big swapper. In fact, she's a member of our store here in Santa Monica.
But of course, isn't she like 7 foot tall and, you know...
Yeah, she's really tall. Whenever I'm with her, I have to wear really, really high heels.
Yeah, see, like I would
Otherwise, it looks like her child.
She's like a foot taller than me, so she and I would have challenges swapping, but, you never know. There might be a sweater or something.
Yeah, you never know. And you know what's really fun about swapping, you know, person to person is, you know, just styling people too, encouraging people.
Yes,
you know, like,
right.
You know, try that on. That'll look great on you. You know, people, I think, right. get into a little bit of a style rut. And
yes.
And if you were to, you know, when you go to a swap, you usually come away with a bag of clothes. If you were going to go shopping for that amount of clothing, you know, it would cost you a lot of money. And, you know, then, I don't know about you, but I can't walk into a mall without thinking about, you know,
yeah.
you know, third world countries and production and, you know, just all of the negative stuff that goes into making those pretty garments.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to say I'm proud. I proudly don't go to malls very often.
Yeah, yeah. I don't either. I do happen to have a 13-year-old daughter, though.
Well, yeah. So, right. It's not like, yeah, who's perfect? You know what I mean? Like, you got it.
Yeah. And she comes with me to consignment and thrift store. She, you know, especially for teenagers, I think they really see the value in the money-saving aspect
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
I can convince her that way.
Well, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing to help raise awareness, because I don't think everybody really fully understands the impact that the textile and clothing industry and manufacturing has on the environment and how much fun it can be to do all these alternative things. So keep up the good work. Next year, let's talk
Thank
in
you.
Advance, and we'll try to participate and help promote it. And I'm going to do a swap. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, and, you know, if you want to do the Swap Route Challenge yourself for 30 days, you know, just head over to mommygreenest.com/shop-drop-2015.
Okay.
And leave a comment. I mean, that's how people were pledging. Basically, I just asked people to leave a comment and say that they were going to pledge. And we had about 100 people do it this year, which was great. I mean, you know, it's not a huge amount of people, but that's 600 pounds of textile waste and $6,000.
Actually, I think it's wonderful, and I think it's really just the beginning. So we'll check in for sure, and I will go to mommygreenest.com and make a pledge.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks, Rachel. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Want to have sexy green diva style too? And learn more about low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green? Visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. Being green can be so sexy. Well, at least you can be sexy and keep it green. Check out the Green Divas Eco Sexy Podcast for ways to keep it green in the bedroom or wherever you like to have sex.
Well, we haven't done an Eco Sexy segment in a while, so I'm really happy to be speaking with Jennifer Reed. She is a PhD candidate with University of Nevada in Las Vegas. She's a Barrick Graduate Fellow, but she's literally doing her dissertation on ecosexuality. So this is just perfect. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello.
How are you?
Wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. And I think we have a really interesting topic. And just from the couple of minutes that we spoke beforehand to introduce ourselves to each other, I was like, oh, she's going to be really interesting.
Excellent.
So I think we decided for this topic we were going to talk about nature is erotic. And I know that you can riff on that immediately, so I'll just be quiet and let you mm-hmm. explain it.
Okay, well, nature is erotic. So I think most people can relate to having an experience with feeling a oneness with nature when they're out in nature.
Right.
So, you know, going on a hike and feeling that oneness with the woods, or, you know, being on the beach, at the ocean or at the water and feeling that, you know, that oneness. And
right.
that kind of experience is very similar to what a lot of people talk about when they talk about sexual experiences, you know,
yeah.
when they talk about orgasmic experiences and feeling that one with the universe or feeling that one kind of feeling.
Yeah.
So there's this erotic energy that, you know, it comes with the with an experience with the planet, with the earth that we live on, because it is a, it's a living force. You know, our food grows through, you know, in the earth, and we're nourished by the earth. So there's a life force energy in the earth, you know, the same as if there's a life force energy with us in sexuality and in reproduction.
Right.
So,
right.
So it's a really, it's interesting that we've, I think we're coming full circle at this point, but that we've kind of created this disconnection with the earth, and as far as like humans being separate from the earth and humans being dominions over the earth and be able to just use the resources and treat it as if it's an object, and that's really hurt us. And that, you know, we're seeing a lot of health issues and environmental destruction happening at this time that seems to be related to creating a disconnection with this erotic force in our life. So I think that we're seeing a full circle coming with people getting more in touch with the earth again, with actually scientifically even being studied at this time. There's a, for example, the Journal of Environmental and Public Health that is, you know, doing studies and publishing studies on, you know, how do we reconnect with this actually electrical force in the earth that is healing to us. So,
And like, who hasn't really, you know, if you've been in nature with a partner and you're like just experiencing the beautiful view of the top of a hike, you know, on a ridge or something. I mean, yeah, it is. It's just very, it's a very natural, engaging energy, right?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, some people wouldn't say, and that's the sexual thing sometimes makes people feel a little uncomfortable. So, I mean, when I'm talking about sexuality, I'm talking about an expanded notion of sexuality.
Yeah.
And I heard your segment with the green dude, and, you know, he was talking about sensuality. And
right.
It's very much, you know, we're talking about sensuality.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think that a part of the issue is, you know, our culture, particularly Western culture, has had this very narrow view of sexuality.
Yeah, you
as
think?
Being, yeah, right? Oh. I mean, the sexuality is just about having physical intercourse. I mean,
right.
It's a very heteronormative kind of thought of, you know, this penis and vagina kind of experience. And, you know, and that sexuality is much more than that. And that we've kind of medicalized it into this, you know, compartmentalized it. And that it's so much more than that.
Thank you, Masters and Johnson.
Right? And that there's more, you know, that there's more literature now talking about, even, you know, in academia, that this medical, you know, it's understandable that we wanted to learn more from a medical model, but that it's become limiting and it's become harmful in a lot of ways. And that, you know, that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, go to a doctor. You wouldn't go to a doctor to learn how to dance, you know?
Yeah, right,
so, I mean,
right.
You go to a doctor, like, if your foot is broken and that, you know, that'll influence your dancing, but you don't go to a doctor to learn how to dance. And
right.
In a lot of ways, you know, sexuality is very much an artistic, expressive, creative thing.
Yeah,
and that, and that we need to re-embrace that part of it. And part of that is getting back to nature.
Well, and I like the concept of just getting in touch with that sensation of, you know, I mean, seriously, standing like on a sunset by the ocean, I mean, it's just magnificent. And it just opens, it melts your heart in a way that is, you know, I could see how that could be equated with sort of a sensuality. It is. It's a sensory experience.
Absolutely. Yes. And I mean, just feeling the sun on our face or the breeze on our face or, you know, smelling the ocean or the trees. I mean, there's definitely there's a healing energy to that. And I mean, and like I said, research is even showing as far as it can be doing very simple things as far as like walking barefoot on the earth.
You know,
we get disconnected literally when we're always wearing shoes and always in a, you know, an urban setting where you can't actually literally ground to the earth. And we have, you know, we're electrical beings and the earth has an electrical charge, and we literally, you know, can gain healing effects from grounding ourselves to the earth by just physically putting our feet on the grass or the sand or the gravel for a short time.
Well, and who doesn't, you know, for me, if I've been a little down or whatever, just inside too much, and I go out for an invigorating walk in the woods, I mean, that just, it just enlivens all my senses, whether that, involves my husband or not.
Right.
It just makes the experience of interacting with everybody a little bit different, you know?
Yes, absolutely. It's been shown to, like you mentioned, going on a hike. has been shown to improve concentration and spark creativity. Like, they've had people take, you know, take tests before they've gone out in the woods, and then after, or have like a control group that didn't go on the hike and the one that did, and, you know, compare results. And it has shown that there's definitely an improved concentration and more creativity that is sparked once somebody has been, you know, out in nature for a while.
Well, I like the thought patterns going on here, and I appreciate it. So let's talk more, because we'll close out this segment, and I know that you're going to come back and talk to us about some of the more aspects of what you're studying and what you're learning, and I think it's great.
Wonderful. Absolutely. I look forward to it.
Thank you, Jennifer. Turned on yet? Well, go to thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com, to learn more about this Green Divas Eco-Sexy podcast and find other low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Well, I am really, really interested to talk to this next guest, Paul Douglas, who is, he's a world-known meteorologist. He's an author. And the book, I have it notes. My notes are all over the place. Restless Skies, which was fascinating to look at. He's an entrepreneur. He's very, very creative, and he's really helping create a message and helping to communicate a message about weather and climate change and what we can learn from both. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Megan, it's great to be with you. Thank you for the nice introduction.
I hope so. I mean,
I am not worthy.
I was reading and trying to kind of, you know, make notes on an introduction. I thought I could spend 15 minutes. Just, this guy's so busy. But you're out there now talking about climate change and helping some of us understand it from the meteorological, if I can say that out. Meteorological standpoint and a scientific standpoint, but you have some really, you come from it from a different angle than most of us that are in it would expect. And can I kind of go down that road?
Oh, absolutely. And that, you know, people think that climate change, you know, makes you a liberal, and I say, listen, acknowledging the science doesn't make you liberal. It makes you literate.
Yeah, it just is. Right. It's not.
The data is the data. But you're right. I'm coming at this from a slightly different angle. I was raised, you know, in a Baptist family, a very strong evangelical Christian family upbringing. I'm an Eagle Scout, not that that matters.
I think that's actually makes sense to me, though, because Eagle Scouts are, you know, learning about nature and interacting with nature, right?
Right, right. I come from a long line of foresters in Germany, so I guess it's in my DNA.
Really?
I have an appreciation, a love for the outdoors. But I was weaned as a Republican. I usually vote Republican. I'm a believer in the markets, and
yeah,
that usually, not always, but usually the markets come up with great solutions and cost-effective solutions.
Well,
and again, I'm a Christian, and all of this together. I'm also a military family. I have a son in the Navy who flies helicopters, and so.
Oh, you know, and by the way, that son, Brett, is it?
Brett, yeah.
Yeah, I come from a long line. People will probably not believe this. Military of Annapolis graduates, starting with my grandfather.
Cool.
My uncle and my cousin was one of the in the first class of Annapolis that had women. She was one of the first women at the top of the class.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Very, very cool.
Right there with you on that one, pal.
Well, all of this together kind of, I feel like an albino unicorn some days.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because the message is that it's real. And, you know, it wasn't Al Gore's documentary.
Yeah.
That got me to see the light, if you will. It was the increasingly volatile weather, and I started noticing it, talking about it publicly in the late 90s here in Minnesota and connecting the dots, and that kind of led me to acknowledge that, yeah, there's something going on here, and we should all pay attention, and we should not be ignoring or vilifying climate scientists and coming up with conspiracy theories, you know.
No, at this point, it's not about debating, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know, where you come from. I think it is just about the facts, and the fact is there is climate change, and yeah, I want to just tell people, but you did an article in 2012 for Huffington Post called Republican Meteorologist on Climate Change, and it is such a great article. It's very thorough, and you do go into describing, you know, your perspective and where you have come from, and it's really a good read if anybody wants to go look it up. Look up Paul Douglas on Huffington Post and check out that article.
I appreciate that. You know, when I talk to groups and I talk to a lot of conservative groups, I say, look, it's not a la carte. If you're conservative, you should be conservative about the very thing that sustains us.
Right.
And not take anything for granted, and that we have rights and we also have responsibilities, and that actions have consequences. You can't release 40 billion tons of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere and believe that that's not going to have an effect.
Right.
I mean, come on, that's a fairy tale. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I think some of this comes down to the whole schism between faith and science, and that, you know, a lot of people who are religious see science as the enemy.
Yeah.
And that, I don't buy that. I think we were all made in God's image, and I think God gave us big, beautiful brains to think and to use logic,
yeah,
and to have the good sense not to foul our nests. And
you know, that makes perfect sense to me, and I don't understand. Now, have you ever seen the documentary series on Showtime, Years of Living Dangerously?
Yes. Yeah, excellent.
And that episode 4... There was a evangelical minister,
yep,
down in North Carolina
with
that,
his daughter, right, yes, who's trying to get him to see the light. And
they fly Catherine Hayhoe down there, I'm sure you're familiar with her. In fact, I think we're speaking to her also today later on.
Yeah, she's terrific, and she has quite a message and very impactful. That, you know, here is a climate scientist who is a very strong, devout Christian.
Yeah.
And the two are not mutually exclusive. But
apparently.
I think some of this goes to, you know, just the worldview,
yeah,
that, you know, if you acknowledge that this is happening, that somehow it takes you down a path that you don't want to go down.
Yeah.
And I think, again, it's just responding to facts and data.
Well, and taking responsibility on some level. But, you know, we've had a lot of discussions about some of the, like that particular episode, which you reminded me of because it really touched on these topics. You know, the bottom line is this gentleman just, there was nothing you could do in the world, no data, nothing. I'm pretty sure if Jesus himself came to him and said, like, look, this is real, he would just say no. For various reasons, people,
yep,
tend to want to dig in their heels. And I think it's fear of change. I don't know. And what is your experience with that?
I think that's a great point, Megan. I think, as James Inhofe, the senator from Oklahoma, who famously believes that global warming is, you know, the biggest hoax ever perpetrated on
right,
man.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of conservatives are scared of the implications. In other words,
yeah,
the cure is worse than the disease.
Yes.
And if they don't acknowledge that they have a disease, they don't have to think about the cure, because in their mind, the cure is big government, more,
yeah,
regulation,
yeah,
EPA times 10.
Yeah.
When in reality, what's going to save us is who's going to be the Google of solar energy?
Yeah.
Who's going to be the,
yeah,
Apple of wind energy?
Yeah.
We need to supercharge the markets, and the only way to do that is putting a price on carbon like you would any other pollutant,
yeah.
And then let the markets come up with solutions.
I think there's a lot to be said for that, because the demand will create innovation. I mean, you know, what
yes.
do they say is the mother of invention? You know, that
well, yeah, I refuse to believe that the same country that sent men to the moon, split the atom, cured polio, can't find ways to keep the lights on that don't require 19th century extraction techniques. Really? We have to rely on dirty fuel to keep the lights on and keep the economy powered up? No. I mean, we've got vested interests. The richest corporations that have ever existed, and there's still trillions of dollars of coal, oil, and gas in the ground. They want to get to that carbon. Their future depends on it. This is an existential crisis for these companies like ExxonMobil and Shell.
Yeah.
And so that's why there's still doubt and confusion and conspiracy theories floating around. And I understand that. They want to keep the carbon party going.
Well, clearly you and Elon Musk have to get together and, you know, come up with the solutions. Because you, my friend, are also obviously a very innovative thinker, because I'm reading about you, and you have several different companies. You're an entrepreneur, but you came up with some 3D weather imaging technology that was so cool and impressive. Not only did many, you know, stations around the country use it, but Steven Spielberg used your technology.
Yes, he did.
That's so cool.
In Jurassic Park, and I actually have one line in the movie Twister.
Hey,
Bryce, you better come here and take a look at this.
That was your line?
That was my big line. I still get residual checks from Warner Brothers, and I kid you not, Megan, my last check was for 1 cent.
I was going to say, sometimes
they send
they're
me a
kinda
check for a penny.
Yeah. You're like, well, okay, I guess they can
so the
add
film
up.
Thing isn't working out real well, but it
thank
was
God.
Fun to dabble.
You've got this weather thing to fall back on.
Well, for me, the fascination is sort of the intersection between meteorology, climate science, and technology.
Yeah.
And we're going to need new technology to, you know, just to keep up with this, to adapt to this warmer, wetter, in many cases drier, stormier world where, you know, the things we take for granted today, our kids and grandkids will not be taking for granted, like clean water, availability of fresh water.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, having enough moisture to grow the crops we need.
Very scary.
So I think, you know, new times require new technologies, and America has a good track record of creating the entrepreneurs and the technologies that we need when we need them. We need to unleash the markets. And to do that, we need a revenue-neutral, in my opinion, a revenue-neutral carbon tax where any excess money doesn't go to the federal government. It goes right back to U.S. citizens in the form of a tax rebate. And
what a great idea.
And I'm not the first one to propose that. A lot of people, including many Republicans like George Shultz, have suggested this. Let the markets work. They're magic. But you can't pollute with impunity. You can't pull up, you know, your dump truck and dump chemical waste into the nearest lake or river.
Yeah.
There's a common good. But we've been using the atmosphere as a sewer, a convenient sewer, for hundreds of years. And now, you know, the weather is biting back, and we're going to be seeing more symptoms of climate change in the years ahead.
Interesting, because I think I read that you do consult from time to time with communities or companies that are looking to understand what's coming in terms of weather so that they can plan. Is that true? I mean,
it is true.
Right?
We consult for some Fortune 500 companies that are worried about major storms, and they're seeing the uptick in extreme weather. And we have some big agricultural companies that are based here in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. And I gave a speech recently, Megan, to some of the higher executives, and the CEO stopped me like 10 minutes into my speech, and he said, Paul, he said, you don't have to convince us that climate change is real. We see it in the data. We see it in the sourcing of all our commodities.
Yeah.
And tell us where we should be growing cocoa. What part of Africa is not going to become a desert in 20 years? He goes, that's what we need to know, that kind of intelligence.
See, I think that's That's actually encouraging that companies are starting to acknowledge and realize and plan and call smart people like you.
Well, there are a lot of smart people out there, and I certainly I don't count myself smart. I just keep asking questions, and I'm lucky enough to hang out with smart people.
Well,
but I'm also on the board of the Evangelical Environmental Network, EEN,
yes.
Which is really reaching out to conservatives and to Christians and talking about creation care and stewardship. And that as Christians, no matter what your faith, we
right.
do have a responsibility to take care of this amazing gift we've been given.
Right.
And not to do so is sort of the definition of, well, it's not sort of, it is the definition of greed. It's like, hey, I'm going to,
yeah.
all for me and whatever I can accumulate and to heck with the planet.
Yeah, and honestly, there's just not a religion on the planet that I really think is legitimate that would agree that greed's good.
No, it's not, and you're right, and I think a lot of people now are questioning capitalism and can unfettered, unchecked,
yeah.
consumer-driven capitalism survive the way it is now,
yeah.
and I think the buzzword, Megan, for our kids and our grandkids is going to be sustainable
yep.
capitalism. How can we still have satisfying lives, all the energy we need, and tread lighter on the planet and not use the resources that we're currently consuming? You know, how do you sustain 7, 8, 10 billion people?
Well, and see, these are the themes and the things that I think cross all boundaries. They cross all political aisles, religious aisles, because we are all in this together, whether we like it or not, and whether we believe in Jesus or Allah or nothing.
Right.
You know, if you're here on the planet, we have to start asking these questions and we have to start answering how are we going to do this?
This is going to be the civil rights issue of the 21st century, in that the people who have the least
yeah.
will be the first. They're already being affected.
Yeah.
So, you know, the people with wealth, you know, the 1% can move away from sea level. They can build higher walls. They can,
yeah.
you know, they can flick on their air conditioning. They will find the water they need to survive. It's the people who are right on the edge and much of the developing world. But again, much of this, I think, can be, what's the word I'm looking for? I think new technologies
yeah.
Are going to be necessary
to
required
mitigate or
to mitigate
adapt.
This. Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Well, so. I am really excited about learning about what you're doing more. And what's your next thing, and what can we look forward to coming from you soon? Because I know you're doing a lot of new things.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we launched a new weather channel called Weather Nation TV back in 2011, and that's still up and going strong. And I'm actually writing a book with a minister in Pennsylvania.
All right.
Called A Case for Climate Conservatism. And
I like it.
Try to reach out to conservatives and evangelicals and just make the case why they should pay attention and why they shouldn't just be dismissing this as a hoax or a conspiracy theory. It's not. It's real. And as people of faith, no matter what your faith, or if you have no faith, I mean, we have a responsibility. This is a scientific issue, Megan, but it's also
yeah.
a spiritual and a moral issue.
Yeah.
What obligation do we have to future generations? I think
yeah.
Thomas Jefferson would argue that we have a considerable obligation to
yes.
future generations. And they're going to be pissed. At some point, your grandkids are going to ask, what did you know when? What did you do? Did you sit on your hands,
yeah.
or were you part of the solution?
Yeah.
And I, you know, I want to be able to pass the red face test, as I know you do,
yeah.
with future grandkids.
I have grandkids. And
do you? Is it as good as everybody says?
It actually is better. Yeah, it really is.
Is it?
Yeah.
I can't.
You know
wait.
How when you're going to have kids and everybody groans and says, "Wait," you know, and
yep.
then you really have no idea until you have them. You're like, "Oh my God, they were right. This is really crazy," and then. everybody around you when you start having grandkids, and they're like, oh, wait, wait, it's so much fun. And it really is. And they live with me right now. They've been living with me and my daughter and her two children. And it's amazing. It's amazing. But when we talk about future generations and I look at them and I think of them and I think, what kind of world are they going to be in?
Right.
And this propels me forward.
Well, you know, and a lot of conservatives get hung up on freedom. and I tell people, look, this issue is about freedom, the freedom to live where you want to live.
Well,
and not be impacted by rising sea level or debilitating, devastating drought or flood every other year. The freedom to have the job you want to have.
Well,
you know, being a farmer is going to be increasingly problematic in the years ahead.
Well, I think freedom is one of those things that comes once we've satisfied, you know, your basic survival instinct survival issues. And, you know, I mean, if we're having drought and food and energy and pollution issues and health issues, freedom becomes diminished, I think. Just saying.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And one of the things that I tell people, look, climate change doesn't hit home until it hits home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be hitting home with greater frequency and ferocity in the years ahead. I think we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. But I tell people, just keep an open mind.
Yeah.
You know, be open to data and don't just make up your mind and then cherry pick data to support your ideology. Be open to new data. And I hope the climate scientists are wrong. I really, for my sake, for your sake, Megan, for your grandkids, I don't see any evidence that they're wrong.
Yeah.
And I think we just need to pay attention. Anytime 97 to 99% of PhDs, thousands of them, say the same thing, I think we would be well advised to listen.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time, and I'm looking forward to talking to you more as things develop and evolve, and they do. So hopefully we'll get to speak to you again pretty soon.
Well, I appreciate your time, and thank you for getting the word out on so many subjects with Green Divas. I'm impressed with your ministry, if I can call it that, your outreach, and I predict more great things for you.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
I'm going to get that one right.
Everybody, Paul Douglas. And Paul, is there a particular website you'd like them to go to find out more?
Well, you know, I write a daily column for the Star Tribune, which is the big newspaper here in the Twin Cities.
Okay.
And so I do a weather blog, which is weather information and also climate stories that I find interesting. So I'm trying to aggregate and curate the articles that I think are timely and interesting, and every day I have a new update, and I try to include the links so that you can drill down and do your own research.
Okay.
But that would probably be the best resource.
Good. Well, thanks again for doing the homework, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon, Paul.
It was my pleasure.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THE greendivas.com.